This is all theater. This is all just political theater.
Political theater. Political theater.
Pure political
theater.
Theater.
Political theater.
The nefarious,
significant, and protracted
political theater for political theater's sake.
I yield back.
From Washington, this is Political Theater. Roll Call's review of the spectacle of politics on Capitol Hill and across the country. I'm Jason Dick.
Georgia has become an important swing state in American politics. It has had a bevy of competitive statewide races in recent years at the presidential, gubernatorial, and Senate level. And on December 6th, the last race of the 2022 campaign will conclude when voting ends on the runoff between Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican candidate Herschel Walker. This campaign has been close. Warnock, the pastor at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, that's Martin Luther King Jr.'s old church, won a runoff of a special election in January 2021 to help give Democrats their majority. And Walker, a Heisman Trophy-winning football star at the University of Georgia, moved back to the Peach State with the support of former President Donald Trump to run against Warnock. This is the first time the major parties have nominated black men to run against each other in Georgia, and who these two are and where they come from means a lot to the state. With us to discuss this is our old friend Clyde McGrady, an enterprise reporter at the New York Times and former reporter here at Roll Call, who has deep connections to Georgia. Clyde, it's been too long. Welcome back to Political Theater.
Thank you for having me back. It is good to be here.
So let's start with the Georgia stuff before we get, you know, just how we got here. This is like the 900th Georgia runoff Senate election we've had in the last two years. We had two competitive Senate races in 2020, and both of them went to runoffs in 2021. John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won those runoffs. The one that Warnock won, though, was a special election, so it was only good for the remainder of what was Johnny Isaacson's seat, and then Kelly Loeffler was appointed and ran for it, lost to Warnock in January 2021. And so that's why we're having another Senate race, which I'm sure the people of Georgia are thrilled about. Every single commercial on TV has to have been either Warnock or Walker. And it has been competitive. Warnock got a few more votes than Walker last month when voting ended on Election Day. It's hard to say on Election Day, right? Because Election Day is not election month. And that because Georgia has this requirement that you have to get 50% plus one in order to win an election, they've gone to a runoff. I think some of the campaign ads before Election Day were Warnock. He like showed up at Thanksgiving dinner and was like, "You don't want me here for this," you know, alluding to like, "Let's just get me over the hump," you know, and preclude a runoff. That didn't happen, but that's where we're at, and it has been a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty funny and self-aware for him to do that because, I mean, they have, if you recall last time in 2020, the runoff lasted, I think, 9 weeks.
Yeah.
It concluded January 5th. And, you know, Georgia lawmakers shortened the window to 4 weeks.
They're just like, we can't put our people through this.
I mean, I was down there and it really would, the entire commercial break would be, there'd be pro Ossoff ad, then there'd be David Perdue would run an anti Ossoff ad, then there'd be a pro Kelly Loeffler ad, and then, you know, Warnock would run an anti Loeffler. It was crazy. And, you know, if Warnock wins this one, this will be the fourth race that he's won. Like, you know, that's more races than I think most senators do in their lifetime. So he will have been battle tested within a 2-year span if he pulls this off.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about your connections to Georgia. Among them, you're a University of Georgia alumnus, political science, which also happens to be Herschel Walker's alma mater.
Yeah, I mean,
but the family roots go much deeper than that, much more than just college. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I think five generations is as far back as I can trace it. And also I'd used to attend Morehouse College, which is where, Warnock went to school. And yeah, I'm an avid University of Georgia football fan. And now it is interesting. It's an interesting time for Herschel to be running because, I mean, if you follow college football, you know that Georgia is the number one team in the country. They're undefeated this year. They won the national championship last year. And so, you know, there's some question as to whether this nostalgia and just good feelings about Georgia football is redounding to Walker's benefit right now. I mean, it is hard to explain the cultural space that Georgia football takes up, and that he is the biggest star in Georgia football history. And I don't think it's uncontroversial to say that. And in the 80s, when Georgia won their first national champion, or their second national championship by defeating Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl. And then they also, the following years, they were in championship contention too and came up short. But he, you know, Heisman winner, the most famous college football player, you know, in the country. Some say he's the most, you know, the best college football player of all time. I mean, this man is, you know, Georgia and Georgia football. And, you know, he came into the race with that basically 100% name ID. And he is pretty much riding that despite some, you know, personal scandals or, you know, stumbles on the stump. So,
yeah. And you know, very much embraced the football part of it. I mean, even his signage, you know, his campaign signs are, they have a football where, you know, some people have like a horizon or a prairie or a sun. His is a football. It's the top of a football. Mm-hmm. And again, his, you know, college career was storied, and then, you know, he was one of Donald Trump's big splashes, you know, when yeah. he was a New Jersey general in the USFL, and then he went on to play for the Dallas Cowboys and then the Minnesota Vikings when they enabled the Dallas Cowboys to win so many Super Bowls by trading off all their draft picks for him.
Part of one of the most famous trades in NFL history when, you know, they got rid of him, and as you said, sent him to Minnesota and got all the draft picks that would form the core of the 90s Dallas Cowboys dynasty.
So one of the things that I've noticed, and you know, you and I have sort of long bonded because, again, a lot of people who live in Washington, who work in Washington, particularly live in Washington politics, they're not all from here, from D.C. It's a city of a lot of transplants, particularly in the media world and politics and so forth. But you and I we were from really from away, right? You're from Georgia, from the South, you know, and I'm from Arizona. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all of the weird eccentricities of the political systems there, you know, people – you know, there's a lot of history. It reminds me of a line in the movie Big Night when somebody says like, "Oh, Italy, so much history." And Stanley Tucci says, "In Italy, there is nothing but history." So there's a lot of, you know, we have brought that, I think, and bonded over the years, you know, in our, you know, working together on just, there are things that people don't get sometimes in politics who work here. And one of the things that I've heard over and over and over again is, why is this race so close? How could people support Herschel Walker? You know, there's a history that he has talked about in his own autobiography of mental illness and of threatening, you know, his wife. He came to light, you know, there were some reporting that he had paid for a girlfriend to have an abortion. So the when people have said, how can it be this close? I'm like, are you kidding? I mean, like these two men represent two big religions, you know, big cultural touchstones, particularly in Georgia. On one hand, the Black Church with you know, Warnock, and on the other hand, college football with Herschel Walker. To me, it's not a surprise. But let's talk about why. You know, you've hinted at it with Walker, but that most people just don't think in politics the same way we do, right?
Right. I mean, again, it is really hard to overstate just how famous he has been for so long, since the 80s, even as like a high schooler, as like one of the top recruits in the country. People knew, like my mom knew about Herschel Walker when, you know, she was in high school.
You just have to say Herschel. You don't even say Walker, right?
Who was just absolutely dominating high school football. So, I mean, there is that. There's just fame. Also, you know, from a, I guess a political science perspective, there's just partisanship, right? He's a Republican, and I know, yes, Georgia pulled off one of the biggest political miracles in 2020 by sending, you know, two Democrats, one a black pastor and one a young Jewish millennial to the Senate. But Georgia still, I think, tilts a little farther red than, you know, a lot of people, you know, may realize. And there are a lot of extenuating circumstances. You had Donald Trump, you know, going around basically telling his voters that, you know, the election is rigged and kind of making it all about him and depressing turnout. And that's not to take away anything from the organizing that Stacey Abrams did and the campaigns that Ossoff and Warnock ran respectively, but Trump played a huge factor in their victories. And so I think there are structural advantages that Herschel already has. And a lot of people are willing to look past that. A lot of voters, you know, they may say, well, that's in his past, right? You know,
because who doesn't have a past?
It's like
especially people, you know, in the South, they're vividly aware of the past because it's still there. Like Faulkner said, it's never passed. It's still here.
Yeah. And it's like a two prong. It's like, well, I don't believe it. And even if he did, it was his past. But a lot of people are motivated by fear of the other side having power. Now, that's not to say that everybody, because obviously Brian Kemp ran many percent. I think it was 5 percentage points ahead of Herschel Walker. He beat, you know, Democrat Stacey Abrams in the governor's race pretty handily. And, you know, Herschel Walker, you know, ran pretty far behind him. And so there are some people that it's just, I guess, a bridge too far for them. But yeah, a lot of it does come down to partisanship. And also, you know, the Senate is not the same as the governor's mansion, right? Where, you know, people tend to value someone where the buck kind of stops with you when you're a governor, right? You're an executive. You're the one making these executive decisions. And so, you know, maybe you do need to be a little bit more articulate and inspire more confidence in your ability to, you know, lead. Whereas, you know, Herschel, and, you know, not to impugn his intelligence or anything like that, but he does kind of stumble on the stump, right? He can tell these long rambling stories that, you know, may not have like a definite punchline and
that's a charitable way of putting it. Yes.
He makes some curious statements, right? But he's going to the Senate, right? And I think the Senate for a lot of people is just this faraway thing in Washington that's completely disconnected from their everyday lives. And what do they, you know, people just vote for things. And if he's a Republican, he's going to vote like a Republican. And that's what I care about. And I think that's the perspective that a lot of Republican voters have. And so, you know, you're right. People do at like, how could it be that close? Isn't it obvious that Warnock is more polished and put together? But it's not that simple. And frankly, to some people, I think the fact that Herschel does not sound polished, they see that as like a plus. Like, you know, I know people like Herschel. There are people in my family who talk like Herschel. I'm kind of like her. You know, I think a lot of people say that. So, you know, I think that's why it's close.
And on the other side, you know, I mean, Raphael Warnock, he's been in Washington for a couple of years now. He's run a pretty solid race. He and Mark Kelly really should probably be thought of as like treasury secretaries with the amount of money that they can bring in to campaign coffers. I mean, you know, Warnock in particular just demonstrated this ability to raise money from a variety of sources just in prodigious amounts. He has, you know, I think three times as much money on hand as Walker has been able to organize. I think the number is he's got, you know, 900 paid, you know, staffers, you know, working the campaigns. I mean, it's this huge organizational, you know, advantage. But he also, he came into this with his own constituency as well. And, you know, the Ebenezer Baptist Church is about as close to hallowed ground as you can get in Atlanta. As, you know, we mentioned, it was Martin Luther King Jr.'s church. This is where John Lewis's funeral services were. I mean, this is a guy who comes in with his own constituency and how, what a, another sort of, it's not even a competing pillar, because a lot of people go to church and watch college football, right? They thank God that college football, that maybe this is the reason college football is on Saturday, not Sunday. But he's been able to, you know, really tap into the sort of some of the goodwill, but also attract people who aren't just, you know, wouldn't just follow a famous pastor. Talk about his connection to the community and why the Black church has such a place, particularly in Atlanta. I mean, I did not know that you had attended Morehouse also. So it's even
better. Yeah. So, just to, back up a little bit, I've found Warnock's rise pretty fascinating, because you're right. I think I can't remember the exact year that he took over the pastorship at Ebenezer, but I mean, Martin Luther King Day, it has become like a destination. Ebenezer, the pulpit at Ebenezer, has become like a destination for some politicians. You know, Johnny Isaacson would famously go there. The man who Warnock succeeded in the Senate would go there on MLK Day and speak from the pulpit. And it does hold this very, central space in Black culture and in Black religion and Black politics. But when Warnock jumped into the race, it wasn't like a big splash. I mean, you remember at the time, you know, it was Doug Collins, former representative from Georgia, Doug Collins, and, you know, a staunch Trump defender, and Kelly Loeffler. Those were seen as the two biggest, and they were the ones duking it out. And it wasn't until the WNBA Atlanta Dream, the team that Kelly Loeffler co-owned at the time, you know, they kind of got fed up with her political statements and some of the stances that she was taking, and they put on these, like, you know, vote for Warnock shirts. And then his popularity kind of went through the roof during 2020. But to fast forward to now, I mean, yes, I mean, Martin Luther King Jr., arguably the most important Black American of the 20th century. You know, there's the famous, portraits above, like, you know, Black homes, JFK, RFK, and MLK, right, are seen as kind of the stalwarts of civil rights, right? And so by Warnock embracing that mantle, I mean, that is a heavy legacy and an important legacy to take over. And I think he has benefited from that. Even if you aren't religious, I mean, you probably revere Martin Luther King, right? I mean, you don't get more, you know, consequential than Martin Luther King. And so him pastoring that church, you know, I think has been a great benefit to him, even though, you know, Walker has tried to, you know, attack him as a slick preacher. You know, I mean, there is a kind of trope, you know, in the South about, you know, the slick talking preacher who is not to be trusted, but I don't know how well.
Just talks too pretty, you know.
Yeah, you know, he's very polished. He has the right things to say. And I think, you know, Herschel has said, this man is supposed to be about grace, and yet he is, you know, attacking me for the things I've done in my past. I don't know how well that has worked, but it's something that he has tried. And, you know, in 2020, Loeffler attacked him as radical liberal Raphael Warnock, and used, you know, there's hours and hours and hours of tape on his sermons, and, you know, kind of clipping them and taking them out of context of these seemingly very radical statements that he made, but really were not that far out of the sort of, Black religious
truth. Or maybe he was just quoting Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, the ultimate radical.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most famous one is when you said you can't serve God in the military. You can't serve God in money. And yeah, he was kind of quoting the Gospels. And it was like, Raphael Warnock disrespects our troops. And, you know, it obviously didn't work well enough to get Loeffler reelected. But I think a lot of Black people, especially Black churchgoers, were very offended by that and took it personally as an attack on their faith tradition. I mean, you go back to the civil rights movement, it was a Black church that was where the meetings would take place about as they plotted their next move in these, you know, campaigns, whether it was Birmingham or Atlanta or Albany. That is where people would meet. That is where all the activist energy was. And the leaders, you know, Martin Luther King, Joseph Lowery, Ralph David Abernathy, these were the male leaders of the movement anyway, tended to be pastors. And that, you know, church attendance is not what it was. And, you know, the Black church doesn't have the same power as it did in that era. But I mean, it still holds this cultural weight and cultural significance for a lot of Black people.
And one thing that I feel like, you know, it feels sudden that Georgia has become not a state that you could take for granted, right? I mean, it was for, you know, the longest time it just elected Democrats because Democrats were the sort of legacy party there. Mm-hmm. And then in the 80s and 90s, you started to see a shift towards the Republican Party. The politics were always basically the same. You know, there were always a right-leaning politics. And then I feel like in 2008 and in 2012, you started to see the margins lower a little bit, at least in the presidential vote. And then all of a sudden, you know, Stacey Abrams gets within, you know, a hair, you know, mm-hmm. in 2018, you know, Ossoff and Warnock win, Biden wins. What's it been like to see that transformation as somebody who was a political science student when this was happening?
I mean, you're right. There's always been a strain of conservatism, even if, you know, most people were Democrats, right? Like Johnny Isaacson, who I mentioned earlier, who's a senator, Republican senator from Georgia. You know, he was one of the few back in the 70s, right? One of the few Republicans. I think there are only a handful of them. But, you know, in the 90s, you have the Gingrich Revolution. Newt Gingrich, who represented Cobb County, which is now Blue County, which is just crazy to think about. Like the congressman that came out of there, Newt Gingrich and Tom Price. And now it's like a blue county. But anyway, you have the Republican Revolution, in the South. I think the last governor was Roy Barnes, mm-hmm. Who got elected in 1998, and lost.
He was going to be president. I remember when he got elected in 1998. People were already starting to talk about like, oh, he's going to run for president. No.
Well, he upset a lot of people, including teachers, who, you know, it's kind of his base. But anyway, we don't have to get into the his political mistakes. But then Sonny Perdue, who would later become, you know, agriculture secretary, he became governor. And, you know, Nathan Deal followed him, an ex-Democrat who switched parties, become a Republican. So, yeah, it's been dominated by Republicans. But I would say the first warning shot that I know, like that, you know, maybe something was up, was 2008 when Republican Saxby Chambliss got forced into a runoff by Jim Martin, who no one was really checking for. And all of a sudden it's going to a runoff. And I just remember a rally where, you know, Young Jeezy and T.I. and Ludacris came out to stump for Jim Martin.
You're like, what is happening?
That was enough. And I mean, he got destroyed in the runoff. But I mean, he put a scare into Saxby Chambliss and some Republicans. And then obviously the rise of Stacey Abrams and her organizing talent and just the ability to make voting such a central issue you know, really lay the groundwork for what's happening in Georgia right now.
Yeah. I recall that our first podcast together on this show many moons ago, we were talking about Roseanne, the rebooted Roseanne show, and Atlanta, and how they reflected so much about working class people that a lot of folks just didn't see that portrayal in pop culture a mm-hmm. lot. And I was thinking about this. I mean, you know, again, we've sort of framed it in terms of like college football and the black church, but I would just say that, you know, being again, a sort of a culture, you know, nerd, that if, you know, Georgia, to understand Georgia, it is you do need to understand on one hand Atlanta, and then you also need to understand the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah,
and not just because Cooter became a congressman, Ben Jones, but again, he's another one of those conservative Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, it and seeing these sort of, you know, just sort of cultural tales, you know, like over the you know the tailwinds come in. It's just to me, it's fascinating. And. And one keeps our job interesting because it's like it can change, you know, like quickly.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up Atlanta because the series just concluded a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, Atlanta also just, you know, culturally and symbolically just plays such a huge role in like Black American life. It's seen as this place where Black people can come to thrive, and there is just a solid middle class there. And you have the Atlanta University Center, like we mentioned earlier, like Morehouse, Spelman, Clark Atlanta, these colleges that produce all these Black leaders. And it really is, you know, seen as a place where Black people can thrive and aspire to things. And, you know, in I know Herschel's not from Atlanta, but in their own ways, these two do represent the path for Black aspiration, I think, for a lot of Black men.
So you mentioned to me off mic that you're working on a story. Do you want to preview it a little bit for that?
No, I'm not going to preview it, but I will say, I mean, it is a story that just explores how, you know, how voters are thinking about, you know, Warnock and Herschel and how their identities are like playing out in the race. I can say that much.
Excellent. Well, yeah. I would encourage everybody to keep an eye out for that story that'll be on the New York Times, I'm guessing, sometime soon. We got the election coming up. This is what you're witnessing is an editor reporter interaction, listeners. It plays out multiple times a day in our lives. Clyde, I'm definitely we have so much to go on, you know, with the work that you did at Roll Call too. That in the show notes for this episode, you know, I've got some of the stories you did for us, you know, including an appreciation for Johnny Isaacson after, you know, when he called it quits and had to resign early, precipitating the Loeffler elevation to the Senate, and then this series of special elections and elections, as well as there is one story about his barbecue, the way that he brought people together on barbecue. So everybody who's listening to this, check out the show notes for some of Clyde's greatest hits from Roll Call, and of course follow him on social media because he just does great work.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
And Clyde, thanks again. I will be again, like the rest of the political world. I'm really looking forward to this campaign season being over. But this is quite a banger to go out on. So it's a good race, and the reason we do our jobs. But and thank you for shining a light on it.
Yeah, this race really is the encore.
It's
the season. They came back out. The crowd wouldn't stop clapping, so they had to come back out and play Freebird, I guess.
All right. And thank you out there for listening to Political Theater. Make sure that you follow us, rate us, do all that stuff you're supposed to do for podcasts that I can't remember off the top of my head. Subscribe to our newsletter and check out Roll Call on rollcall.com. Thanks again, everybody.